Hey guys, welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where I, Maite, normally talk about queer and Latinx media with Fried Papita, but today it's just me and the amazingly talented Christina Grace. If you haven't checked out his new Iceman series for Marvel, you should. It's fantastic. I had the pleasure of interviewing him for popnerdtv.com, and he was nice enough to let me post the audio here for everyone to listen to the full conversation. It was recorded on my laptop with him on speaker on my phone, so the audio isn't perfect. Thank you for tuning in anyways, and find us on social media at CYC Podcasts and Cena Grace at Cena Grace, and I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. First things first, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. 31.
31. Did you do anything fun?
Day of, not really. I just went and got like lunch with my mom, and then met a few friends at a bar down sort of the street, and and then after that my boyfriend took me to like a funny hotel called the Madonna Inn, which I thought was gonna be way like sillier, and it just turned out to be sort of like Las Vegas for adults without gambling.
Okay, that makes sense. Was it Madonna themed?
No, it's, like, I thought it was all, like, the rooms were going to be, like, they're all themed rooms, and I thought they were going to be, like, over-the-top, like, sex themes, like, or silly and, like, you know, just ridiculous, like, in that movie Blue Valentine with, like, you know, like, vibrating heart-shaped beds.
Oh, wow.
But it's way more family-friendly than that, and the rooms are all themed, but it's like Disneyland, where, like, the room we had was Portugal, so it was just, like, kind of old tiles and sort of, you know, more classic furniture and stuff like that. I definitely had, like, set my expectations real high, thinking it was going to be, like, the most, like, ironic, silly, fun yeah. time ever. And it's like, oh, no, 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 this is where people around here go to, like, spend a weekend with their kids.
Oh, that still sounds kind of cool, though.
Yeah, and it was, you know, and that's what's always fun, too, is, like, to leave, especially a city like L.A., where, like, everyone's just so kind of fake. It's really nice to, like, leave L.A. and just sort of, like, you know, check out how other cities are and what's cool and what's fun to do, you know, outside of your comfort zone. But it was cool, yeah, it was good to, like, drive, like, you know, 100 miles out of town and, like, onto the beach. So I was happy about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting me blather about that.
Oh, no, yeah, it's fun to hear. All right, well, let's talk about Iceman.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Why?
Oh, why? All right, well, I kind of, like, read a couple of things that you've already kind of talked about with other people, and I was reading that you kind of wrote this character as a message to people that were already grown up, you know what I mean? Usually, all this stuff is kind of aimed for, like, teens and people going through stuff, but this is for grown-ups, and about becoming their best selves. So how's, like, the response been from older readers?
So far, I mean, you know, the internet has a lot of opinions.
Indeed.
And honestly, like, when I say that, like, I write, you know, I've been writing it for older readers and older people, I think they've been happy, like, because I, you know, when I say that, I mean, like, I'm trying to write this for people who have loved Bobby Drake and have loved Iceman, you know, for the past several decades, and, you know, there are people who just, like, have always wanted this guy to have his own book, so I've just been trying to make it the best book for them, and then also, you know, I am thinking of an older reader in the sense of, you know, when you hit a certain age, just mainly, like, once you leave high school, you don't really get a lot of people encouraging you to grow and encouraging you to sort of explore, you know, what makes you tick. And so that's kind of also the audience in mind for Iceman, is like, you know, the person who wants to be better, but is now older than, you know, 22, 23.
Yeah. That, it was refreshing to read for me. You know, cause usually, like, yeah, it was really nice. Other than that, I want to talk about the dad jokes and the punny humor, because I love it so much. Do those jokes, like, come, like, easily to you, or do you have to work at those?
I'm just laughing because it's, like, some of them are real, real, like, low-hanging fruit, and you just have to take them. And then some, I sit with, and yeah, it's mainly just like, how cheesy is this, and is it like forgivably cheesy? Like, you know, and I kind of follow Peter Parker as the Marvel rule of like, you know, what is a forgivable banter, but yeah, usually like I'll write a joke and then I'll kind of sit with it, and before I turn in the final script, I'll like look at the joke and see if I can come up with a funnier version of it. And then also, like, to the point of dad jokes, where it's like, oh, but, like, maybe it shouldn't be funnier. Maybe it needs to be, like, cheesy and lame, you know? And it just sort of depends on the, you know, where in the story it is.
Yeah, I love it so far, so good job.
Thank you.
I also want to talk about the purifiers. Like, they definitely come off as these, like, Westboro Baptist church types. Is there anything in the real world that kind of inspires you to write for them?
Yeah, I would, you know, it's funny that you said the Westboro Baptist church, because I'd gotten a story from a friend of mine, sort of about being raised, she was raised Southern Baptist, and, like, just the attitude and how also current this attitude is, about, you know, anyone that just doesn't fit in their comfort zone, you know, whether it's like sexuality or skin color or any of that. I was drawn to the fact that that still exists. And then I ended up watching this movie called Accidental Courtesy. Have you heard of this one?
I haven't, no.
Oh, it's so weird. So it's about this, it's about this, like, black blues musician who basically kills Ku Klux Klan members with kindness. Like, he owns, I think, what, 3 or 4 hoods. And what he does is he just, you know, he approaches them and says, I'd love to have a conversation with you. I want to know where you're coming from. And the documentary just follows this, like, black dude who's, like, just, like, goes into the heart of the beast and converts KKK members. And so watching that made me realize, like, oh, the purifiers think they're right. Like, it's really easy to, you know, sort of make them these, like, one-dimensional villains, and they kind of are, even when I read them, but you know, I wanted to, like, understand the psychology. Like, why do you actually think, you know, especially after so many X-Men stories and after so many battles, like, how do you tell this in a, you know, a fresh way? And so I just, like, watched a lot of videos, interviews with KKK members and leaders and stuff like that, and really looked at that psychology for the purifiers and mutants.
I love that. I haven't heard of that documentary, but I think I know, I've seen something about the guy that actually talks to those people, so I think I know what you're talking about.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, it's so, like, I hate to say, you know, like, a movie that's combating racism is, like, so entertaining, but it really is. It's just such a, like, he's just got such a fascinating approach, and it also doesn't, it does kind of argue both sides, because, like, then there are black activists who are like, yeah, but look how much time you wasted converting 4 KKK members. Like, don't you think, you know, your time could have been spent doing something else? But, I recommend it to everyone listening and to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely check it out. I don't think it's a waste of time. I guess, like, moving in the same kind of direction. Even though I was kind of, like, in my feelings whenever Bobby's dad called him, like, abnormal, essentially, it kind of amused me that he knew what a romper was. So that was cool. But anyways, the meeting, like, between Bobby's dad and the extremist, I think that was so interesting because, you know, Bobby's dad is, like, a real man of faith. And then you have these other guys who think they are, too. So what kind of have you received, like, any feedback or specific comments about that comparison? Like, I thought that was very important.
Well, thank you for saying that. Thank you. No, I'm really glad you said that because, like, I knew in issue one that, like, oh, I'd be bringing the purifiers back because I'm all, like, I really do love the sense of, like, every action has a consequence and, you know, there was a reason why Bobby was, I don't know. Anyway, my point is, like, I knew that it was okay to have a very one-dimensional representation of a purifier in the first issue, but, you know, again, back to, like, the internet has a lot of opinions. There are these people who are just like, wow, what a, like, old, old and, like, stupid, you know, ignorant view you have of, like, religion and blah, 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 and, like, why are you doing this? And so I was really happy to do the third issue where, like, I could make it a real-life parallel and sort of have it. I wanted to have, like, a fair conversation and a fair representation of someone, like, who is religious, but isn't trying to kill our favorite character.
Right.
And, you know, but also, like, you know, it's still, like, Bobby's dad is, like, hella Irish Catholic. So he's not necessarily, like, the best, you know, spokesperson for, like, religion as well. But at the same time, I just was like, look, I get it. Like, don't worry. I'm not writing very, like, you know, I'm not just looking at religion in sort of one dimension. I really wanted to, like, kind of present a gray area, and then also and have this person who in Bobby's life is very antagonistic be the only person who can actually, like, speak up and, like, you know, defend himself against that head purifier guy. So thank you for saying that. Yeah, I really wanted to, like, I just wanted to play with those two figures and then also kind of add some dimension to, like, faith and everything. Even, you know, wherever you're at, I just thought it was a very interesting conversation for readers to have a peek into.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, and even, you know, if he isn't, like, the perfect you know, example of a religious person, I mean, he's three-dimensional because you made him flawed, you know what I mean? I think that's important.
Thanks. Yeah, I try. Yeah, and everything comes from, like, a real place too. Like, the story about what was it? It's not the headmaster, the dean of students. That was something one of my a guy I dated had gone through when he went to one of those schools. And again, so it just always is like, if I can find a real example of it or real emotions, then, like, it's okay to put it in the book, and then I can stand by it, because it's like, well, it was real for somebody, like,
right. Absolutely. Awesome. I love, like, the portrayal of just, like, a grown man dealing with acceptance or the lack thereof from his parents. He already has, like, the pressure of convincing them that there's nothing wrong with him because he's a mutant. And then now we're adding on, you know, he's a gay man. Like, will that kind of be a very similar struggle with his parents? Him being a mutant, him being gay. Will they kind of treat? Like, I guess you can't. You might not be able to tell me what happens there.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can't quite tell you. I'm just, well, I'm excited. It won't be easy. I'll leave it at that. But I think people will be surprised how each parent reacts and the things they say. The fun thing about this story in Bobby's life is, like, everyone just assumes people all come out, you know, when they're, like, 16 to 21. And more when I talk to people, it's like, everyone's journey is different. And, you know, I had a friend who was only able to come out to his parents, at 25, and another person who wasn't even able, like, just like Bobby Drake, wasn't able to deal with it until he was about, like, 30, 31. And so I just have been taking all of these insane and intense conversations that people have had with their parents, and really, you know, applied it thoroughly to what I think Bobby Drake's parents would do. I don't know. I don't want to say much else. It's like, I shouldn't be smiling either, because it's, like, not a fun conversation, but it's, I'm just really proud of Bobby and, like, how hard it is going to be for him to stand up to his parents. But I've written that issue, so when it comes out, I think people will like it.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Like, I can't wait. Yeah, it's one of those things where we have to enjoy even the sad parts, because it's real.
Yeah, I mean, even if, like, this is a weird example, but, like, even the tension of, like, when is Buffy the Vampire Slayer's mother going to find out? And when that does happen in the show, it's, like, such a, you know, intense and dramatic moment and so important, you know what I mean? And I think this is similar to that, because I've had a lot of fun sort of taking what is metaphor and what is just literal and sort of dancing and mixing and matching them both. I'm not explaining that very well, but it's really great when, like, you know, being a mutant's a metaphor for these things, and then suddenly he's also the thing that he's a metaphor for.
Yeah, exactly. Really, yeah, because I noticed it so much in the conversations he had with them about being a mutant, and then it was just like the exact same thing that you would expect from somebody coming out.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's been in all, that's what makes great X-Men stories. A lot of people always bring up, and I completely admit to having forgotten the scene, but, like, you know, people always bring up that Bryan Singer moment in X-Men 2 with Bobby Drake, where his parents are like, oh, can you try not being a mutant? And that's a very, like, that is so very, like, you know, that's a gay reading, to be sure.
Definitely. That's hilarious. Well, speaking of, like, upcoming issues that we probably can't say much about, the upcoming issues, like, they have Dakin, I don't know how to say it, and Juggernaut as villains.
Yeah.
Out of, like, I guess all of the enemies, really, in general, that Iceman gets to fight in this new series, which one was your favorite, and why?
I'm gonna say, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right either, but I say Dakin. I think, yeah, like, I heard Marjorie Liu say it out loud once, and I wish I'd have remembered, but I think she says Dakin. Anyway, he's the most fun just because he has such a salty mouth, and he's also not afraid of anything. It, like, Iceman versus Juggernaut was so hard to write because they're both so mega powerful, and it was one of those just, like, I didn't quite know how to, like, make the battle crescendo, and I did. I found it, and it's dope. But with Iceman and Doc Hen, like, they can just do so much with each other, you know, between the claws and the fist fighting and the sort of back and forth of it, and then on top of that, I think it's safe to say, you know, like, Doc Hen is openly bisexual. And so it was so much more fun, too, to also add a level of, like, flirtation to the fighting. So, yeah, if I get my way, we'll see him again in the books. And Juggernaut was really, really cool. He was fun because he's so stupid. And it's like, oh, that makes it easy in a way, you know? Like, but it's also like, oh, it's so hard. He's just, like, literally unstoppable. What do I do? And I was reading old Juggernaut back issues, and I was like, they just basically, like, send him away for a little bit and, like, hope for the best. Like, I didn't know how to, like, deal with him, but you'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm pretty excited about Dakin for sure. Let's see, I did want to ask about I guess certain pressures coming from fans and just in general. Would you say that you feel, like, more pressure to make your version of Iceman unique from, like, other people, the Iceman that other people have written, or do you feel more pressure to keep them familiar to the diehard fans, which you talked about a little bit earlier?
Yeah, I think there's just a pressure to, like, with any X-Men character, there's a pressure to give them X-Men 92, like, give them exactly what they want, you know, give them that yummy touch of nostalgia. But then readers really do want to be challenged, you know, like, you don't get the Dark Phoenix saga just from spinning your wheels, you know, like, that you have to sort of push the envelope and sort of think about things in a bigger way. And I guess that's the pressure I feel, is sort of juggling how human of a story I want to tell versus the fact that, like, oh my gosh, if you look at a summer movie, like, just the fight scenes and the set pieces are so vivid and insane and big. So it's been a matter of, like, how do I keep up with the Joneses, but still honor whatever it was I set out to do? But all, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I have really, really cool editors, and I think I've got it. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm just going to keep doing this. And if people say I do a bad job, then yes, I do a bad job at it. But yeah, it's a matter of, like, yeah, how do you give them the Bobby Drake they want when sort of the whole point of the series is, like, Bobby Drake is changing. And I think I'm doing a pretty good job of it. We'll see. Again, it's like, I read all the back issues and I try to find the psychology of the character, like, through and through. So that way, whatever decision he makes, like, I can still speak to, you know, well, like, you know, in this person's run, he did that. And in, like, Marjorie's run, he did this. And so, that's sort of the balance I try to find is, like, even if I push him out of reader's comfort zone, I always can point my finger to a place where you can track the logic. And that's what's going to be cool about this legacy tie-in, where we're getting champions back together. Because Bobby was, like, such a different person back then. And it's going to be... And I think that's going to be the best version of, like, you know, giving someone exactly what they want. Like, oh, we want old-school Bobby Drake, but then putting him in this new context where lots of new adventures can happen. So I'm pretty stoked.
That's going to be issue 6, right?
6 and 7. I think I'm allowed to say that. And if not, you heard it here first.
Awesome. All right. Sounds good. I can't wait. Part 2 of Feeling the Pressure. This is kind of a little more general. But, you know, it's been, like, becoming more and more known to creators of all kinds that their portrayals of queer people in general, you know, they have a real effect on audiences. You know, like, they used to portray trans people as psycho killers all the time, or vice versa. And when, in fact, you know, trans people are the ones who are getting killed all the time. So breaking the vicious cycle of these tropes, it's important. But some people, I guess, feel like limiting what queer people can do or how they can be portrayed is detrimental as well. Do you feel like you have to hold back, or do you enjoy the challenge?
You know, it's such a complicated... I keep saying, like, I'm very lucky. Like, because of how sensitive I have to be to, like, Bobby Drake's specific journey about just sort of coming out in your 30s and, like, or your late 20s, you know, Marvel aging, who knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to take it real slow with him because, again, coming back to, like, the reality of it and people I know, you know, I understand the psychology of having to reconcile these things later in life. So I'm super lucky because I get to take baby steps. And I talked about this at Comic-Con. Someone was like, you know, there is this demand and this pressure, especially, you know, in the... I like to just say queer community. It's quicker than LGBTQ,
yeah.
AI plus. But you know, in the queer community, there is this pressure to, like, there's the born this way, born this gay person who's like, I need my sexually explicit life on paper. And then there's the everything in between, you know, where they're like, well, what about us? Like, help us out. So there's a lot of pressure to just, like, make sure I'm not creating any erasure. I found out someone, like, or I saw someone on Facebook was like, oh, did you see they're, like, accusing you of bi erasure? And I'm like, what? No. But, you know, to that effect, it's like, oh, well, in someone's eyes, because of the path I've chosen with the sexuality and because, you know, in a sense, I'm applying a binary to him, I am excluding others. But then to me, I'm like, well, fool, like, read issue 4, when you get your openly bisexual Doc Hen in the book, like, don't you worry, I've got your back. I guess that's the thing, is I wish everyone could read, you know, all of sort of the first story arc in one go, because day to day there's this, like, well, that wasn't there, and this wasn't there, and I'm like, I know, I understand, but, like, you know, you can only tell so many stories with so many pages. So, yeah, I feel, you know, but again, I'm lucky because I can sort of take my time with Bobby, I don't feel burdened by any pressure that someone puts on me, because I go, at the end of the day, it's like, it's not what, you know, it's not what you, Marvel, Disney, or anyone says. It's about making sure this character is treated with, like, love and justice and compassion. And if I can do that much, then that's the job I got hired for. And everything else is, you know... I don't know, frosting or something, or not frosting, I don't know. But yeah, like, that's the thing, is, you know, Marvel's been really, really supportive and trusting of the decisions I'm making. And I do think at the end of the day, like, the fans see this book as net positive, and I know that there have been more troublesome books in the past. Like, some people really thought that Rawhide Kid book was super detrimental and super, what's the word, minstrelly. And I want to avoid that. Like, I definitely don't want to ever put any, like, minstrel type characters or any any, I don't want to like create, I don't want to put any like easy sort of qualifiable people in the books. Like I'm trying to think of like a twink or something, you know what I mean? I don't want anyone to like use sort of lame words when they're reading the book.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's still just like a real person. He's still like in the X-Men, and yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think if I missed answering that question in any way. Did I answer that right? Or, I mean, did I answer that properly?
No, yeah, definitely. I think you did. Yeah, for sure. Because, yeah, I'm reading back through my question to make sure, but yeah. yeah, that was perfect. Well, is there anything, I guess, about Iceman that you want to talk about? So I've been kind of asking everything that I want to know.
Yeah. What do I want to talk about? I'm all like, this morning I was like, I want some points because I've been doing a really good job making New York references. But that's just, I'm kidding. but no, I don't know. Yeah, it's been a super, super fun process. And I, you know, it's been like, this book was going to like be so hard to write. And it is hard to write in some ways, but it's just gotten so much more fun. And I just feel like people who've read since issue one are going to just be happier and happier with every chapter that comes out. I think the third one with the purifiers, like that's sort of the tone we're taking moving forward, is that, you know, things are just going to start happening really fast. And Bobby Drake kind of has to, like, you know, he can't keep doing things at his pace any longer. But then at the end of the day, like, I've been working really hard to make sure that he sort of always has his agency intact. You know, to what you were saying about, like, trans characters and pop culture and stuff, what's been so important to me is, like, maintaining who has agency in what decision and in what process. And similarly, you know, it's like, I don't know if I'll get the chance to sort of, you know, introduce a fully fleshed out, awesome trans character, but one of the things I am trying to do is, like, sort of show a side of Kitty Pryde as a friend, you know, to this person, and sort of what, you know, I don't know, I think that, like, she has a lot to deal with, just thinking, like, oh my god, like, my ex-boyfriend's now gay, but then also it's like, oh, my friend's going through this thing, and, you know, I'm excited to sort of give everyone processes, and that's going to be where all the drama lies. I'm so excited. I know I shouldn't say it like that, I'm, like, smiling, but there's just so many, the Doc Hen issue is so, so weird, and I hope people like it, because it's the most me I've been on the book. Like, I, like, injected so much of my personality and so much of what, like, I find to be the interesting flavors of a Marvel book, so we'll see. I'm trying to think if there's anything, I just don't want to say anything, because it's such a weird little journey to when you see Doc Hen come on the screen, or the page, rather. All I will say is he's in formal wear, and he's very handsome in formal wear. That's one teaser I can say. and that he and Iceman definitely fight.
Oh, that's awesome. I that's one of the ones that I'm looking forward to for sure. Well, yeah. Well, I was going to say something, and then I got distracted by Doc Hen.
You're like, yes, but what's his hair style going to be? He has, like, we're doing him in, like, a faux hawk and a man bun. I think it's working out for him. I'm trying to think of anything else interesting to say. Yeah, issue 5, we get Alessandro Vitti back. He's the one who drew issues 1 and 3. And then in the Champion storyline, those issues are going to be drawn by Robert Gill. And it's just, like, it's really cool because everyone kind of has a different interpretation of Iceman. And I love them all because everybody's strengths are different. So Alessandro is, like, so good at these intense and emotional and these, like, you know, really visceral fight scenes. And then Robert is so capable at, like, capturing just, like, how much fun Bobby Drake has being a hero. And then with issue 4, with the Doc Hen stuff, that's drawn by Edgar Salazar. And, he drew issue 2, but something about issue 4 just really, like, everyone was firing on all cylinders. Same with, like, Rochelle Rosenberg, who's doing the coloring. Like, It's just, again, like I said, it's like, I really think it took a minute for people to catch on that this book is going to, like, it has a point and that it's going somewhere, but it's not going to, like, you know, oh, he's going to fight Magneto. Like, and because it's been an emotional story arc, it's been very fun to, like, watch people month in, month out sort of grade this book and you know, hate it, like it, hate it. And I think everyone's like, oh, I get it. I like it.
Yeah, like you were saying earlier, it'd be really awesome if they could, like, read the whole thing and then kind of have a full commentary on it. Because, I mean, I kind of binged Reddit, and I think that was the way to go.
Oh, yeah, and here's what I'll tell you, too, because I think this is okay to say, and if not, I'll go find out from the powers that be.
Yeah, just but, let me know. Let me know, and I'll cut it, yeah.
But, you know, the nice thing about, so, like, that second issue with Kitty and that kid that they rescue, like, you know, he is the reason for issue 4 happening, because he goes missing, and his going missing may or may not have to do with Doc Kent. But, like, and that's the thing I love about it is, you know, I've been real, I guess because these sort of, like, threads aren't connecting as, like, straightforward, or I don't know what the word is, but, yeah, it's just, man, I am surprised at how quick readers are to judge books nowadays. Like, I remember when I was working as an editor on The Walking Dead for Robert Kirkman, and it was like, you know, I should have listened to him, because when he made those first 6 issues, he always talked about how quickly he had to kill Shane off from the books, and it was just because he had to keep readers reading and he had to make stuff happen. And he's like, I couldn't have done anything differently, but, like, I would have loved to have prolonged the, you know, the Shane, Rick, Lori love triangle. And that's what they did on the TV show, because at least with that, they had the luxury to take their time. But yeah, in comic books, you gotta hit them hard, hit them fast, like, every month.
Yeah, definitely. Because you have that, you know, the first 10% of whatever it is, you have to snag the reader. But when you only have a certain amount of pages in a comic book, it's difficult.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like, oh, now I understand why, like, a lot of new Image books just start out 40 pages, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, well, I don't want to, like, mess up too much, but you've got to make sure the reader gets whatever it is they need to keep coming back, and that's where things are going to go with Iceman, is, you know, issues 1 and 2 were very, like, sweet and self-contained, and issue 3 was also self-contained, but moving forward, you're going to get a lot of that Marvel melodrama.
A lot more cliffhangers, I imagine.
Yeah, in a way. Sorry, in my way.
Right.
I don't want to spoil too much, or be like, yeah, and then, you know, the end of that issue is Bobby cut in half. Although now I'm like, oh, I should do that. Although, see, that's happened in older X-Men books, and I'm like, I don't know that I need to do that. Like, you know, the story where, like, Bobby gets broken into a million pieces, or, like, he can't reform himself. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll do something like that.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, as long as it's a metaphor.
Yeah. I do, and that's the cool thing about issue 5, is I do elaborate on something regarding his powers, and I'm intensely curious to see if readers like it or hate it. That's all I can say.
Okay, issue 5. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, the Juggernaut issue.
Right. Awesome, awesome.
But, yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for talking to me. This has been great.
Of course. Thank you for having me, and thank you for reading the book and supporting it. And, yeah, here's crossing my eyes, nose, and toes that I get to tell, like, you know, 20 or 30 of these. I just want as many Iceman stories as I can get.
Same, I'm loving it. And then I'll be in LA, like, later this year, so maybe, like, once more issues are out, we can talk again, maybe.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Yeah, so I'll be around. It'll be probably a little bit easier than a phone call.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah, I look forward to seeing you.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you so much.
For sure. Keep in touch, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.